Hi everybody, and welcome to episode 20, which is the last episode of season 2. I want to say a big thank you to everybody who sticked around and supported me through season 1 and 2. And also a big hello to everybody that's new. And another thank you to everybody that joined our Synesthesia Awareness Day meetup on the 2nd of July. It was so much fun to see everybody, to hear so many different stories. And yeah, it was just so fun to see how people from all around the world show up at the same time, even though it was in the middle of the night for some and only very early in the morning for others. So yeah, that was fun. I hope that we can have an even bigger event next year. Let's where the next year takes us, but a panel would be really nice, or presentations or whatever. We'll see. But I'm very happy so many people also shared posts about the Synesthesia Awareness Day, which really helps to spread the word. Yeah, so I just want to communicate my feeling of this was a success. So another big thank you to Steven and to Ali, who were co-hosting and initiating it. I think it was a real success, and I'm very, very curious to see where it will take us. It also made me think about the history of synesthesia more, and not just the history of the last like 40 years, but like the history of it. And I think that could make a really, really good episode as well. Like looking back at when was synesthesia first ever? What were the first? Ugh. I'm so bad with history, I don't even know how to speak about it. I will definitely get myself an expert on this and just listen to the story they have to share. If you happen to be a synesthesia history expert, please hit me up. Okay, so today's guest is Sheila Butunji. She is board member of the African Synesthesia Society. She's also a member of Journey Through the Senses, and she is a vet. I don't have to tell more. We're gonna just meet her and learn about her. She's just a lovely person. Enjoyed it so much to meet her. We even recorded the video of our conversation, so I might use that for something, not sure yet. It did stress me out, I'm not gonna lie. It's one thing to say the right things at the right time and focus on a conversation and say sentences that make sense, but then also pay attention to your face and hold eye contact, and I don't know, I'm not made for TV. Maybe I'm an audio person. Yeah, but we'll see. Maybe I'll use sequences for something. It was still nice to have the video version of the interview. Okay, cool. So that was season 2. Enjoy the next 30 minutes and our conversation, and then I will be back in August. Thank you so much for your support. Big hug to everyone around the world listening, and I'm gonna enjoy my summer break. Bye. So welcome with me, my guest for today, the wonderful Sheila Butunji. Hi, Sheila. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you? Hi, our listeners.
I'm really good.
Me too.
That's good. You are a member of the African Synesthesia Society, and that's partly what we want to focus on today. But maybe you could tell us a bit about where you are based.
Okay, my name is Sheila Butunji. I'm from Uganda, and that is from the eastern part of Africa, on the east coast, or towards the east coast. I'm part of the Synesthesia Society of Africa. It came into being in 2021, I think. And I'm part of the board, part of the founders of the society. I'm also a synesthete. And I'm glad to be here on your podcast.
I'm so glad people connected us. And I'm really curious to hear more about the African Society for Synesthesia, because it's young, like you said, it's not that big yet. So maybe this podcast can help to gain a couple members and make people aware of the Synesthesia Society in Africa.
Yeah, well, we have membership from different parts of Africa. We have from Rwanda, we have Nina from Rwanda, We have two members in Uganda, myself and a colleague of mine in called Dr. Sente. We have our chairman, Abiola, who's from Nigeria. I think we have somebody from Botswana and other members in Nigeria. So we are still a small group, still a small association, but we are growing as we move. And we hope to grow more and expand more as people get to know about the association, about synesthesia itself. What I can also say at this point maybe is because we've been supported by the International Society of Synesthetes and Artists and Scientists and other synesthetes across the world. They've truly tried to help us build our organization.
I mean, Africa is huge, so many people. There must be so many synesthetes. We just have to put the word out there.
Yes, that is the idea.
So let's focus on your story for a second. We spoke before and you gave me a bit of a very short introduction on how you came across synesthesia. That's how to put it. Maybe you can tell us a bit more about how you came across synesthesia and your story of finding out about your rep perception.
Okay, great. I've always, of course, known I had a certain condition. Why? Because my siblings, my family, my friends at school didn't really talk about the way they listened to music or appreciated music the same way I did. So I always knew there was something about me that just wasn't just like anybody else. So I was curious. I really was curious about why names of things, letters, numbers, music, different music, different types of music, different genre had different colors in my head. It was always easy for me to say, oh, no, please change the song. I don't like that song because it has a certain color. Or please increase the volume on that song because, you know, it has a very beautiful color. So, of course, my friends, especially in the teenage years when we were at school, because I went to boarding school, and my friends would be like, yeah, but why do you say it's blue? Why do you say it's yellow? Why does it remind you of gold? And I didn't take it so seriously, but about 2011, I really got curious. There were resources, there was the internet. I said, why not? Let me try to search and find out what it is that makes me, you know, see things the way I see them. So I went to the net, searched, typed in, was like, how does the brain perceive stimuli? How does the brain perceive, you know, different things, the environment? And there was so much research that wasn't really relating to what I was trying to look for. But then I came across this one name, Joseph Lodo, something like that. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name properly. Seemed to have a Facebook account, and he seemed to be like a musician, stroke a scientist. I sent him a DM, and he replied simply, "What you're describing seems to be like synesthesia," and I had never come across that word. And then he said, "Many people have the condition." Started reading about it, that different people have it, there are different forms. I came to be connected to the Sean A Day list. I think somebody I came across on the net directed me, you know, gave me his email. I sent him a link and I became part of the group. And I've since then met so many other people that I'm very grateful for. So that's how I came to know about it. I was just curious enough. And I'm glad there were resources, there was internet.
You said you were curious enough to find out what it is. I think probably the forms you have are also intense enough, because if it's less intense, you might not have to, like, it doesn't really reach your consciousness.
Yes, I think I'm curious enough, and then I think maybe because I have a scientific background, I had done biology in school, I'm a vet, although I studied animals, but you know, building up to that, I had enough scientific background to understand that the brain usually will be stimulated by, you know, different things. Alternatively, if I hadn't gone out to search and talked to people, my colleagues maybe, and said, guys, I have this condition. I listen to music and it looks like this. why does my brain, you know, function like that? Now, synesthesia affects the way I remember things. So I think that made me curious enough. It made me curious enough because it's part of me.
And have you heard about the terms projector synesthete and associator synesthete?
Yeah, briefly. I think one is where you associate things in the, like in the window of your mind. Is that what they call it? Like behind your eyes or in the brain? And then another one is where you see things in front of your eyes. Something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it either happens in your mind's eye or you just know it, but you don't see it at all. Or a projector would see it almost out there. Well, some see it out there. And for others, it's more like a layer.
I think I associate because it all happens in my brain, behind my eyes, in my mm-hmm. imagination.
So when you hear a song that you don't like, it doesn't block your eyesight. You can still drive a car.
Yes, I can still drive a car. Although if I don't like it, sometimes I've felt nausea. Sometimes I felt nausea, so it might make me that uncomfortable, yeah.
Well, that is an effect then, yeah. If it even makes you nauseous, that's yeah. quite... And what yeah. do very beautiful songs make you feel then?
The beautiful ones, first of all, I will want to hear it in its loudest form. And I like to actually listen to the music myself, like the effect is better if I'm wearing like headphones or something like that, and really loud. From a very young age, I could only concentrate on reading or studying if I'm listening to loud music. So it's something that helps me do tasks that I'm not very, very interested in or very comfortable with. So if I have to concentrate on something, I will put on the music. Why? Because it creates a very nice environment in my head. And then I can be able to do that task. For instance, studying for an exam.
I really like how you said because it creates a really nice environment in my head. I think that's something we should focus on more.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's a really nice way to put it. I really like that.
Yeah. And the exact opposite, of course, is true. If the music is not very interesting and it's in a certain place, I would like to leave that place immediately. If they can't turn it off, maybe I'm in a public place. I would rather walk. I can easily walk out of a restaurant if the music is not so good.
So would you say music to color or sound to color synesthesia is your strongest form?
It is the strongest form. Although pain can be really terrible, it can be enhanced if I'm having pain and then I can see it. I can see the color. I think it makes it worse. And of course, smells. My family members tell me that I'm very sensitive to smell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe also because of the associated colors. So yeah, sound is the strongest, obviously. But then I've come to realize that pain is worse because I'm seeing pain. And then sense are also equally strong.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested about the pain because I also have that, but I would not say it makes the pain worse for me. It makes me grasp it better and understand it quicker. I never really thought about it. Yeah, maybe just go ahead and describe what pain to color is for you.
For me, it comes from the point of view that it will maybe, like, for example, like females have period pains. Sorry, I have to talk about this. Yes.
Oh, so please.
The onset of the pain. So on the onset of a period pain, I'll see it. Then I think it makes me anxious that how long is this pain going to take? Before maybe I take medication, or if I need to medicate, how long is it going to take? So I get anxious around pain because I can see it, I can feel it, and I know the path it's going to take, like how long it will be there, you know, I can. So I'll say, okay, this is an ovulation pain, this is an onset of an ovulation pain, or this is an onset of a period pain, or I'm going to a dentist, and I can already imagine the colors of what I'm going to experience before the dentist puts their equipment in my teeth. So I think it's the dreadful or the fear or the anticipation that makes it worse. I think because I'm seeing the pain in two dimensions, I'm seeing the color of it, and even I imagine it in my body, exactly where. For instance, with sharp pains, I will see a line. The pain from the dentist's office, I'll see a certain color, like I'll see a silver color, silver straight line. And all that, I think, makes me more anxious about the pain and about the experience. And I think it's dreadful.
Do emotions have colors for you too?
Yes, they do. But I've never really tried to see them in form of color. But I think they do have different, I think they do have different color. Certain unpleasant emotions, it might be worse because maybe I associate them with a certain color, but it's not something that I've concentrated on or been aware of it, but I think it could be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about how synesthesia is perceived? Is there a stigma around synesthesia, maybe in your family, your town? Do you live in a city or in a more rural area? And how is synesthesia perceived?
I think I'm the only person in my country, for instance, that has, other than Anina, Professor Anina, who talked about it the other, like 2 weeks ago, who gave a talk. I think I've only come across myself, honestly, that talked about synesthesia. One time I posted on a Facebook group that had maybe over like 500 people, mostly ladies, and they were very fascinated. They couldn't believe such a condition existed. They started asking me questions about what color their names were. They were really interested in knowing about it. Then they asked me, what did it mean? Did it mean that if somebody's name is pink, it has a certain implication? So it taught me that not very many people know that they have it. Some people were even said, yeah, I've always thought like that. So I had like, out of the 500 people on the group, the ones that responded, there were like about 2 people that said, yeah, they had always seen associated colors with words and sounds and everything. So each time I have tried to find out from my community, there's usually somebody that says, I didn't know that was a real condition. I didn't know it existed. But after that conversation, they don't usually follow up like as if they're interested in knowing more about it. Others wanted to find out whether maybe I had some kind of special gift that is like the way you would see how people can read minds or people can read cards, how people can read cards. So other people are thinking that I can see visions or something like that. So it's always had interesting feedback. Yeah. Because I think maybe, I don't know whether in Africa we are, it's culturally that we are superstitious or we are naturally in touch with our spiritual side. So some had that to say that, you know, what does it mean? Does it mean that it's evil? Does it mean it's good? Does it mean I have good luck? You know, because people have different ways that they perceive color, different colors. So that's what I've been able to find. But there is no community or there are not many people that have said they had this condition. It's always when I asked or when I posted about it that, you know.
What's the population size of Uganda?
Uganda, we are about over 40 million people.
Over 40 million?
Yeah, 1 million people.
Well, that's a lot of synesthetes.
Yeah, those are many. Those are many.
And 40 million, that's massive.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, we are very many people. So, and even when I got to know some synesthetes, for instance, in Kenya, where they did some study during the Nairobi Design Week. The gentleman that is in charge of the program, he used that as an opportunity to find out whether people had ever heard about synesthesia and what they might think about it. So I think it's very new on the continent. I think it's very, very new on the continent. The information about synesthesia is very, very new.
So what are your hopes for the African Synesthesia Society?
Okay, our greatest where we agree the most is that we would like to create more awareness about synesthesia and about other neuro conditions. Create awareness in as far as the general public is concerned, in universities, in schools, in the research world, so that, you know, people can begin to know about it, know about themselves, but also research about it and even include it in as part of the teaching curricula. That is really our greatest wish. We want to also be able to create a platform in which different people of all walks of life can meet and discuss it and learn more about it and discover more about it, and even where it benefits them, be able to see what they can do with synesthesia. Like, for instance, through the different connections, we know that there are people who have synesthesia, for instance, the ones that can test, and they've been able to be kept their jobs or been good at their jobs because they can be able to test and see color in, for instance, the beverage industry. Like, for example, those that are in coffee or wines or in those industries where their gifts or their condition, having synesthesia, has helped them be better at their job. So if it's something that can help somebody's career, yeah, I would like to bring the community to many people come to learn about it and collaborate with other people across the world. Yes. And of course, Africa has a diverse culture. Different people have different cultures. We have different tribes, different languages, different beliefs, different music. So how does synesthesia, for example, get reflected in our culture? Or how, would like to see all that come together as part of what the association will be able to do. Of course, all that is dependent on resources. For instance, to be able to create awareness, yes, we could use the advent of internet. As any baby association, I think those are the things that we need to deal with now. And I think collaborations help in that area. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, I think the society will definitely grow over time. And I'm sure if it has passionate people like you who want to put the word out there, it will just naturally grow. And the question of the cultural effects on synesthesia is a very interesting one. It's one that I also think about quite a lot. And Sean Day also offered to come back to the podcast to talk about, since he's in linguistics and anthropology, he offered to talk about that, the cultural differences he noticed around the world in terms of synesthesia. So I think that's a very interesting topic to talk about.
Yeah.
I have another question for you, and I'm very curious what your answer will be, because I did not think about it until like 5 minutes ago, but now I really want to ask you this. As a vet, as someone who works with animals and experiences strong synesthesia, did you ever think about what would synesthesia in animals look like? And is there any track of, like, did someone ever look into that? Do you know that?
Well, one of the people that I have met, I think Daniel Schuster, the way I pronounce his name, I'm not very good at his name. He told me of a certain vet. I think she is very good with animal psychology. She works with animals, and he told me that I think animal whisperers are able to I think she's one of the animal whisperers or something like that. I don't know what that's the term, but in being able to offer therapy to animals, she was able to tap into her gift. She was able to tap into her gift and her interest for and her love for animals has somehow been able to help her because of having synesthesia. So I think having synesthesia can help you, on that side. Now, on the animal side, I'm not really sure. It's not something that I really thought about, although I have an attachment, for instance, to certain animals and not others. We connect mostly to dogs. Others have a connection to cats. I don't know whether there is anything that is on the animal side that makes them be endeared to people.
Yeah.
For instance.
I also don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's an area of study that animal scientists can go into, or animal behavior scientists can look into.
Yeah. I mean, of course, animals can't express it and say, well, this sound is blue or red.
Yeah.
But since we would expect synesthesia to be just a norm variant of the brain and it just occurs in part of the population, I don't know anything about the brain of animals. Imagine they vary greatly. Like different species have different brains.
Yeah, they definitely vary greatly. For instance, but for them, it's really projected. You'll see their behavior change because of certain situations in their stimuli. For example, there are animals that maybe might be sensitive to sound. So usually, for instance, when you're going through the national park, you're advised not to make sound or hoot because animals are sensitive to certain sounds and they'll get agitated or get stressed. I would imagine that they also have diverse ways in which they react to external stimuli.
Maybe yeah, exactly. It must be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be the case. But also, we have such limited MRI brain scan resources. I'm not suggesting here that we should spend them on scanning a couple bunnies and cats and dogs. But it's just a thought I had, having you as a vet here.
Honestly, not sure. Not really sure.
We won't solve that. We won't find an answer to that question today, but I mean, it's just an interesting thing to think
now.
About.
Yeah.
So what do you hope for yourself? We spoke about your hopes for the African society. Are there negative aspects about your synesthesia, or are there positive things or things you feel like you haven't explored yet?
The positives, I take advantage of them even today. For instance, if I'm going for a certain training or I'm going to listen to new information, it's easier. I think my synesthesia helps me to quickly pick things, to quickly understand things that I hear. So that, I think I use it on a daily. If I'm entering a meeting and maybe it needs to discuss certain things, sometimes it helps to have synesthesia. I might not even use a notebook, but I can reflect from short memory what has been discussed in a meeting, and I can, so I use that every day. The downside is that certain pains, certain smells, certain whatever really make me uncomfortable, I just have to avoid, I don't know, maybe avoid them, but I've come to appreciate that it's part of my life and there's not really much I can do about it. Some things are very good, which I take advantage of the fact that I can remember things from short memory very quickly, and that helps me to test out my work. Then for the bad, I don't know, I can know how to deal with my pains maybe quickly, attend to them quickly so that I'm not in a very uncomfortable situation for a long time. In as far as what the future would look like, of course, I would like to write a book. I hope I can write a book about my experiences, things that we've not been able to discuss here, or my life, how different decisions I made in my life were, if I reflect back, were basically because of what I associated or what I could see in my mind, or how my mind was being influenced basically through synesthesia, and I made decisions based on that. And I'd like to have all that on paper so that I can create a book that can be accessed by other people.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to that. Did you ever paint?
I've always taken it for granted that I didn't have the gift to paint, but my kids love painting, so I don't know whether the gene jumped me and went to my kids, but maybe it's one of those things that I would like to explore. Things like interior decoration, what I appreciate in a house, what I appreciate in a hotel, I think I appreciate it better maybe because, I don't know whether it's because of synesthesia or of that's how I'm naturally, that is who I am. But I love arts, I love the wild, I love beautiful places, honestly.
I made a design about that a couple weeks ago, which was called Sin Aesthetics. And I wanted to create this term for all synesthetes. Like, just like what you said, I feel the same. Like interior and just, I think it must come down to my very specific idea of, no, it's not very specific. It just, I can see symmetry. I have good pattern recognition. I know which colors go together. And it's nothing I trained.
Yes.
Like it's not a skill I try to acquire. I think actually, I have to say that. I think just like you said about bad songs, when something doesn't look right and colors don't match, it makes me uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that was my training, avoiding that bad feeling of I can't focus in this space because it isn't aesthetically pleasing. And that's the reason why I got good at it. Yeah. So, I think Sin Aesthetics, we'll just have to make it a thing. I think it's a real talent of us.
Yeah, I think it is.
If anybody listening is either African or maybe from around the world, but based in Africa for a period of time or moved here, what could they do to connect with you or the African Society for Synesthesia? What do you want to put out there for potential members?
Okay, we have a Facebook group people can reach out to, the Synesthesia Society of Africa. In case they're interested in knowledge about us or where we can collaborate, for instance, can reach out to the administrator of that Facebook. And then maybe they can, from there they can get the emails and the telephone contacts for the different members. Basically, I think that's what I can say about that. But we welcome everybody that would like to join us on this journey of creating awareness about synesthesia in any aspect, in any aspect. Yeah, would like to welcome everybody to be able to work with us and send out an invitation. Yeah, send out an invitation as an invitation to anybody who would like to work and collaborate with us.
Wonderful. That's great. Yeah. Okay. So Sheila, I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast and sharing about your personal experience and also the African Synesthesia Society. And maybe there will be a animal researcher or vet that can answer our questions on synesthetic dogs.
Yes. I also wanted to mention, apart from the society, I'm also part of the Journey Through the Senses, a program. I'm the liaison officer for Africa. So that is also another program that is trying to create awareness across different continents in the world about synesthesia and other very unique and neuro conditions or talents and gifts that people. So that's Journey Through the Senses. I hope that one is also has a lot of media presence and people can go to that and find out their program.
Yeah, I had no idea you were involved. We had Anton on, I think, on episode 16 maybe. And we spoke about Journey Through the Senses briefly too. That's fantastic. Cool. Yeah. I'm going to look into it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for your time and being a voice for synesthetes in Africa. Thank you so much. It was lovely to meet you.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you too.
So have a wonderful week. And to all our listeners, I would like to announce that we are diving into summer break now. I mean, I'm going to be on social media still, but I'm not going to produce new episodes for the next couple weeks, and then we will come back with season 3 in August, and I'm already looking forward to this because I have a good list of people yeah, be guests on the podcast. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to us. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk Synesthesia. There'll be a new episode of Series 1 every Tuesday. If you enjoyed listening, you can like, follow, and share. Details about the podcast and how to connect with today's speakers can be found in the show notes. The executive producer was Micah Pricing, with music by Corinne Anderson, and the podcast was supported by a couple more neurodivergent people in the background. See you next week.